Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
No credentials. Reviewing Rolling
Stone 500. Greatest album.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. I didn't want to miss the thing
because
there's like three, at least three songs. There's, I don't know.
G2G.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Sound Logic Podcast. Today we are discussing album number 88 from the 2020 Rolling Stone Greatest Albums of All Time list. This is Hunky Dory by David Robert Jones, otherwise known as David Bowie.
And it still blows my mind that he changed his name because the Monkees were too popular and they already had a Davy Jones. if only they could. Not that the Monkees are not great or popular, but I think that for longevity, Bowie certainly outlived.
Yeah,
they're not. Sorry, this is all going very badly the way I'm saying this. In terms of continuing the music, I think his career was a little more. His catalog was a little bigger. Anyways, absolutely. I'm going to move on before I say anything that could be construed in any way negatively about the Monkees.
That's not how I feel. Should we get into some details?
Well, and just, yeah, I'm glad we're talking about Bowie again. I think this is the third album we've done. And certainly after the switch from the 2012 list to 2020 list, we've gone through some changes.
Ooh, nice.
Is that good? Should we keep that in?
I like it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, don't cut that. That's a good one. But as you just heard, that is the opening track to this song. So yeah, you're right, Ben. We should do some details now. Details. 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 Hunky Dory, David Bowie's fourth studio album, was released December 17th, day before my birthday. But 11 years before, in 1971. Yeah. Wasn't around yet. All tracks written by David Bowie, except Fill Your Heart, written by Biff Rose and Paul Williams. The charting position is very interesting because it charted number three, but not when it came out. When it came out, when it was released, yeah. It didn't chart.
Yeah.
And it didn't chart until he released the Ziggy Stardust album.
That
when
exploded.
That album came out and it was so big, people went back and started buying his back catalog and this album in particular so much that it charted then, which is like...
That's amazing.
It doesn't happen a whole lot. Sometimes you'll see sales go up a bit, but that it actually charts and then it charts for the first time. Really, really interesting. So, yeah, it sold... What was it? I have it here. 5,000 copies in the first quarter. Like, that's not...
Not so good. Especially for an artist that we now think... was just popular
all the
always.
Time. Right. And on his second album, I believe, Space Oddity, you know, was a huge hit. And then, you know, The Man Who Sold the World was after that, I think. Anyways. So mid-72, this album starts getting popular. Not as popular as Ziggy, but popular. Mm-hmm. A couple notes here. So after his 1970 album, The Man Who Sold the World, I believe was his third album, Bowie took some time off from recording and touring, settled down to write new songs, composing on piano rather than guitar, as on earlier tracks. I'm going to make some comments on that later, but you can hear that on this album for sure.
You think so? That piano-driven kind of rather
absolutely.
Than the...
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'll comment again later, but... And a big switch then again back to the next album.
Yeah.
Ziggy, which is very guitar-driven, mm-hmm. electric guitar-driven. Compared to the guitar-driven hard rock sound of The Man Who Sold the World, Bowie opted for a warmer, more melodic piano-based pop rock and art pop style in Hunky Dory. Totally agree. You feel that right away. Mm-hmm. Upon release, Hunky Dory and its lead single, Changes, received little promotion from RCA, who were wary that Boy would transform his image shortly. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
I think just that watching him, like, almost have these multiple personalities and knowing, like, how do we even promote a guy who in 6 months is going to be totally different?
Yeah.
It's funny to think about now, but, like, the fatigue, I guess, of, like, someone constantly reinventing themselves probably does make it a challenge to promote it.
Well, even just if you look at his album covers.
Yeah.
And I think that became a bit of his calling card. If you look at that, right, you can see that, let alone, you know, working with the guy and being around him and his personality and his image and his musical. Mm-hmm. And that might be what they're here. But yeah, the first album, you get a very much almost like a Rolling Stones or Monkees hairdo. Then you get the kind of wild, crazy, curly hair on this Space Oddity. Then on Man Who Sold the World, on one of the alternate covers, he's lying, like reclining on a couch with this long, beautiful hair, and wearing what looks like a dress or kimono or something, like a jumper kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then to this Hunky Dory with this long, you know, colorized blonde hair, looking more and more kind of androgynous, mm-hmm, as he goes and doing that.
I would dare to say even feminine.
More feminine. I think certainly in The Man Who Sold This One, I think you could argue in a few different ways. Either, yeah, more feminine, I think maybe you're more right there. But certainly bending those gender lines as he did famously throughout his career and his early career. And, you know, lyrically, we talked about that on the Ziggy album, where it talks about that a lot. Anyways, yeah, really, really interesting. And talking about singles, there are only two singles, Changes, and then is there Life on Mars? Life on Mars, yeah. Life on Mars, the second single. So,
question mark.
Yeah.
Life on Mars?
Life on Mars, question mark. That's right. I want to mention two... at least one of the musicians who joined here, because I don't recognize all the names, but one, and this again, we'll talk about the piano. So David Bowie, as you said, was composing on piano, but I, like many composers, they will get other musicians to come in and play those parts they write because they're just more skilled, maybe,
yeah,
than the composer themselves. So the name here is Rick Wakeman. I don't know if that's a name you're familiar with, Ben.
I don't think so.
But I am, because I don't think at this time, but shortly after this, he became, and still is, the keyboard player for Yes.
Oh.
And he was not, I don't believe he was in the first iteration of the band. The band is, that's a band that changed personnel quite regularly.
Okay.
But one of their more consistent and famous structures, compositions of the band would have Rick Wakeman. He's known, if you Google a picture of him, Ben, he's known as being on stage. He's like 6'4", long blonde hair, and wears a giant bejeweled robe, like a wizard's robe. And at one point, he had a keyboard that was like a total circle, like a donut around him. Very 70s, space agey kind of thing.
Sure.
And you hear this beautiful piano playing on the album, and a lot of that is him. So this, I think, would have been just before. I think this was probably one of the last things, and maybe one of the things that opened the eyes and ears of other people in the industry that he would join Yes. Now, Yes might have been maybe their third or fourth album. Don't quote me on that. I didn't look it up that he joined. I always thought he was one of the originals, but he wasn't. Anyways, so Rick Wakeman, along with a few other players, not too many other than David Bowie, you know, another 4 or 5 people on the album. Pretty tight-knit. Anyways, I think that's about it for notes. As we mentioned, you know, no awards, no accolades, really. Because initially it really didn't do well. It wasn't until later that people went back to it and went, oh, this is good. And you got it. We've talked about this before. When you don't have your record label behind you,
yeah,
it's really hard to be noticed. You know,
even with credentials.
Yes, absolutely. You need that marketing power that the record label holds to promote your album, even if you're famous, especially before the internet. now with the internet, you know, it'll spread with word of mouth. It'll spread with people sharing, you know, the music on YouTube or TikTok or whatever. It'll get out there if people really like it. Back then, that wasn't the case. If they weren't playing it on the radio, if there weren't ads, you know, on billboards or in newspapers or magazines, then people aren't going to know about it necessarily.
Get this squeaky toy.
That's great.
Get out of here.
Pepper. Do you want to move on to the artwork?
Yeah, this artwork is something else, isn't it?
It's interesting. Like, very interesting.
You just don't, I mean, I guess the one time where I think about male artists really striving to be more feminine is maybe in the glam rock genre, but
sure.
Usually there's like a leaning towards being more more macho, more machismo in the music industry.
Right.
And for someone to like sort of lean feminine or androgynous, as you mentioned, it's really fascinating. The story goes that he was trying to mimic Hollywood starlets from the golden era of movies. And if you Google actresses of Hollywood's golden era and click images, you see these like glowy, effervescent, shimmery hair, lots of blonde. It's pretty spot on. If that's what Bowie was going for here. Really fascinating to intentionally do something like that. I guess we usually describe it in a little bit more detail. You're pretty good at that. Do you want to take a crack at this one?
Sure, I'll give it a shot. Best if you just look it up now as you're listening. But it's a straight on shot of Bowie's face. Again, it's one of those ones that's almost got a bit of a black border of it, but it's offset. The image is kind of shifted down a bit. At the top, RCA in the left, Victor on the right, so that's the record label. Top left in white, kind of stylized, block capital, but kind of small in white, David Bowie, Hunky Dory. And then it's this image of him, and he's looking up just off to the left, you know, at the sun or the light or whatever. He's got his hands are kind of holding back his hair, one kind of on the side of his head, the other one behind his ear, holding back his hair, his blonde hair, and the eyes, the face very bright, glowing, blue eyes, red lips, whether it's lipsticks or not. Can't really tell the clothing he's wearing, but you can't see much of it. But this photograph was taken in monochrome, so black and white, and then was recolored. So really,
as they used to do,
yes,
black and white images.
Yes,
and kind of like choppily done, right? It's not. It doesn't look great. It looks like someone painted over a black and white picture.
It looks. If you had said, what does a picture that's recolored look like? This is what it looks like.
Yeah,
certainly back, you know, we have different technology now, but back then.
Yeah.
So that I think explains also the hair, which is almost more of a yellow than what we would call blonde or golden, right? Which again is in that style of this Hollywood golden era starlet style.
Yeah.
So you get these kind of colors that sort of pop on him, and this very smooth glowing skin. It's an interesting image to be sure. And again, I think we're more used to Bowie. We see images of him with maybe shorter hair.
Yeah.
The Aladdin scene, you know, with the red hair and the lightning bolt is very, very famous. And then, of course, in later years with, you know, either the short red hair from Earthlings or shorter blonde hair, maybe almost like a mushroom cut or kind of... this is a little different, so...
Absolutely.
It definitely, without stating the obvious, gives me that early Bowie kind of look.
It's... I didn't mean to do this to myself, but you know, sometimes when you see a picture a certain way and then you can't unsee it, one of those that comes to mind for that is the Simon and Garfunkel album that we saw. Where
did I do that to you?
Paul Simon's hair looks like a mustache on
if you hold your thumb, hold your thumb closer to your face over Paul Simon's face.
Yeah,
like Art's got a big mustache. But
for this one, though, it looks like he's got his head tilted in a sort of like feminine far off gaze, but
sure,
he's looking right at the font with his hand to his head, almost like a... why did I choose that font? Why did I choose that album title? Like, it almost looks like someone really focused in on the text of the album, and I can't unsee that now.
Yeah, does Hunky Dory even appear as a lyric on this album?
Oh, that's a good question. We're not lyric first guys. That's not a question that we like
it's
to ask.
It's certainly not that usually an album title is either the name of the band or
a track on the album.
Yeah. Or sometimes a lyric. Mm. We've had that, you know, think about Lance Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. That's a lyric in a song on the album. That happens sometimes too, but not as common that you have a name that's not appears any. I guess maybe like a. I guess it does happen. You know, Who's Next? I don't think you know, stuff like that. Anyways, I don't think Hunky Dory appears as a lyric even. So no. You know, it's an interesting kind of. I don't know the etymology of the term. We know that it means kind of okay.
Everything's just fine.
Everything's fine. So I don't know kind of where that comes from. Yeah. But anyways,
And I know he went through many iterations of substance abuse and really poor self-care. Like, wasn't there some diet that he had on one of the albums we looked at? It was like red peppers and milk was the only thing he consumed during that time, and a lot of hard drugs. So I don't know, maybe he was feeling really good at this stage of his life.
I think that was later. I think that was just before Station to Station.
Yes.
When he
really kind of hit.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was doing so much drugs and hardly eating anything. It's not healthy at all. This is much, certainly much, much before that. Hunky Dory, maybe just experiencing the you know, the fame, the success that he had so far.
Yep.
Anyways, that's the album cover.
It's been a little while since we've talked about tracks. It was one of our recent reviews where we were throwing back to an old album from the 2012 list where you actually named all the tracks. And I thought, man,
we used to do that.
That's something we haven't done for quite a while. I don't think we need to name all 11, although it's worth pointing out there's only 11 songs here. It's a pretty nice, neat, trim LP here with two sides, one with 5 and one with 6 songs, and it clocks in under 45 minutes. And this really warms my heart. The longest song is only 5 minutes, 22 seconds.
Love that.
there's no tracks that really get too carried away here. And I don't know, there's something kind of nice about that, at least in my deprived music mind, I guess.
Let's talk about my train of thought, which is chewing all over my brain. Let's talk
about.
You
wanted to say all the tracks, didn't you?
No, not really. No, it's kind of a tradition that I'm happy we don't do anymore.
Yeah.
A couple quick notes before we get into the song. So, many of these songs are tributes to other people or bands.
Yeah.
So on side one, a track called Kooks is dedicated or about his young son. And then when you get to side two, 3 of the 5 songs are even titled for other people and inspired. So the track 8, Andy Warhol, obviously there. Song for Bob Dylan, again. And then, and listener, as with the other listener advisor, the track called Queen Bitch. I listen to that and I go, that sounds like something familiar. What band is it? And I'm trying to think of it. And sure enough, it was inspired and dedicated to the Velvet Underground. And very much does sound like that early punk rock that they kind of inspired all these bands to create. And this is still... I don't even know if punk rock was even a thing yet by name, although some of the bands who pioneered it were starting to come along. But this is still 71, so...
excuse me, a little yawn here.
But the other thing is, And when I think of that song and Life on Mars and a couple other ones, have you seen the movie, came out probably about 20 years ago, called The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou?
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned that because I went down a rabbit trail last week listening to that whole soundtrack, which is Bowie covers in
Portuguese.
Portuguese.
Right. Yeah. So... if you haven't seen the movie, it's a Wes Anderson movie, so buckle up. It's a little quirky. Different, a little quirky, yep. Starring Bill Murray. And I believe the gentleman who plays this other character, I think his name is So George, they're on an exploratory ship, kind of like Jacques Cousteau kind of thing. And throughout the movie, it often cuts to this guy playing acoustic songs on the boat as they're, you know, just be a shot of him just playing a song as they're drifting along, playing acoustic covers, sang in Portuguese of Bowie songs.
And I believe you don't realize it until the melody really kicks in or the chorus arrives. Oh, yeah, that's a Bowie song.
Because he's playing on like a classical, you know, plastic string guitars. Yeah. And some of them are really, really wonderful anyways. I think Life on Mars, I know Queen Bitch, I think they do at the end, maybe in English at the end of the movie as they're walking out of the premiere of their documentary. And there's got to be at least one more. But anyways, I think of that when I listen to some of these songs because that was a movie. I remember seeing that movie in the theater and just being... really it's a striking film. It's quirky and it's funny, but it's really poignant in a lot of ways too. And this, all these weird things happening, like this guy just playing guitar, playing why Bowie songs, why Bowie songs in Portuguese. I think that's the kind of way that Wes Anderson works. He just has an idea. Hey, wouldn't it be neat if there was a guy just playing Bowie songs in Portuguese? Like, and that idea just becomes, this is in the movie now. I think he kind of works like that. Anyways, so before we talk about individual tracks, I just wanted to mention those couple things. Ben, why don't we start with you? Because I feel like I've been talking for the last 5 minutes straight. Anything jump out to you on this album when you turned it on? Had you listened to this album before in full?
No, this is a new album to me. And I remember, I think I've probably talked about this in one of our other Bowie reviews, but I was on a spring break work trip with some college students, and one of them had a Bowie Pandora station on. For our Canadian listeners, Pandora is an app that you pick a genre or an artist or an album and it'll feed you music that's in that vein. And I said, oh, you like Bowie? I've always wanted to dig in. And they said, yeah, I like Bowie, but I don't really have any concept of his albums.
It was just
like they had come of age in this sort of like streaming music era and didn't even know how to direct me to get started. I kind of wish in that moment that this person, and I will remember this if someone ever asks me, point them to Hunky Dory. Like, I think this is just such a good glimpse of Bowie. There's some stuff that you won't have heard before. There's some stuff that you will have heard before. It's quirky. It's fun. It's a little bit more upbeat than some of the other ones that we've heard. And it's not quite as experimental. Although some of the songs in honor of other artists are. It was fun to start with Changes because a radio station here in town recently played Changes on repeat. I don't know how long they did this, but I tuned in one day because it's sort of my go-to when I just want to listen to yesterday's hits kind of music. And Changes was playing, so I listened to it out. And then the DJ came on, and then Changes started again. And I thought, that's odd. Maybe they made a mistake. The DJ came on and then Changes started again. And I was like, what is happening? And so I Googled it. And sure enough, the station was changing its call sign. And while they were in that transition process to get people to the next radio station, they were playing Changes on a loop. And apparently this is the thing. This is not new. This is not something that they came up with. But other radio stations have done this in the past.
You're just kidding me.
Play Changes on a loop as a way to like... subtly tell people, hey, something's changing here. Your favorite radio station is change your preset in your car. Wow. And so I got to this album, was like, oh, sure, I've heard this song more times than I care to admit in the last little bit.
Yeah. Growing up, I've talked about this a few times. When my parents split, my dad got his own place. And it was kind of the early 90s. So they had had all the music was on mostly, I think, LPs and maybe tapes. So my dad got a CD player and started building his own CD collection. We talked about Columbia House. And one of the ones I remember him getting early on was a compilation album. I think it was called Changes Bowie. And I don't know if it was an official one, but it's one you can look up. And the first song was Changes, and it had all his big hits were on it. And I really liked it. I so much that I copied it onto tape cassette so I could listen to it when I came home. I visited him, you know, on the every other weekend. And I think I lent it to either you or Steve. This was back when we were like in grade 8 or grade 9. And whoever had it gave it back to me. I said, "What'd you think, David Bowie?" And the response was, it was kind of weird. I don't know who it was.
It was probably me, because it didn't resonate enough for me to still be struggling with how do I start listening to Bowie many years later.
But I think that, it is kind of weird. Yeah. And especially, like, I bring that up because the opening track here is Changes. That compilation was called Changes. But that compilation, you know, spanned over a number of different albums, and as we talked about, this kind of almost chameleon like nature, not just with his image and persona, but with the music. So you're listening to his compilation album, and one track to the next are so different. Talking about this album specifically, I'm hearing this again, as it mentioned, as the blurbs we lifted straight out of the wiki page, this melodic piano driven feeling of this album is very prevalent, except for, you know, maybe the Andy Warhol song and the Queen Bitch song. Most of it, especially the first side, is very, very melodic, beautiful piano playing. And it really drives it, I think.
Yeah. Was it Mr. Deeds that used a lot of Bowie in it? I feel like there was a scene in Mr. Deeds where Adam Sandler sings something along, I don't know.
No, because early on when he inherits this fortune, and they pick him up in a helicopter, and they go up in the helicopter, he starts singing Space Oddity, Ground Control, and then he gets, you know, the butler and the pilots all to join in as they're flying this helicopter. I don't know if there were more tracks.
That's maybe my earliest memory of like an awareness that Bowie is a thing that maybe I might like and want to dig into a bit more.
Oh,
I don't know why I didn't go any further than that from Mr. Deeds, but yeah.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
Certainly this album is not without that kind of somewhat dissonant, at times quirky sound we get from Bowie throughout his career. That signature
even includes
kind of
some
style.
Space theme. Life on Mars.
Yep. Life on Mars. Yep.
I'm realizing now that this is something that happens quite frequently with these artists that are on the list multiple times, but I find myself wondering, why did the albums from David Bowie wind up in this order? I'll play my hand a little early here, but I like this best of all the Bowie albums we've listened to so far.
Really? Okay. I love that.
I think, why wasn't this one higher? I see value certainly in the others and have enjoyed them as well, but maybe there's something about the low sales initially and the way that it hit when it landed. But I really like this album, and pleasantly surprised by it. I think I've been kind of keeping my eye out for a reasonable priced copy of Ziggy Stardust, but I might have to switch that if my collection's going to include a Bowie LP to Hunky Dory. I think I'd actually prefer this one.
Yeah, it's very good. I think mostly easy to listen to.
Maybe that's part of it.
Easier. Station to Station, I felt, was a little more experimental, and that's why maybe it's a little more critically acclaimed. And was kind of in that set of a bunch of albums that were kind of all sort of in the same vein, done at the same time. I don't know. But yeah, I think this has maybe a little more mainstream appeal.
Perhaps. That's it. I'm just a little bit too soft and not quite as edgy.
And we've talked about, you know, aside from Changes, that's the big hit off the album. But again, say big hit, but it wasn't a big hit. I still can't get over that this was just kind of like it came out and it was like nothing, you know?
But the nods to other artists and the, you know, Kooks I really like. It's a quirky little song. There's a way to introduce your child to the world. It's such a neat idea, too. I'll write you a song about how weird we all are. Welcome to the Kooks.
Yeah, I think that's what I would say without, you know, going into detail on every song. I really, really do like it. His vocal is so good.
Yeah,
you know, the soaring high vocals. Isn't that fun? You know, just great stuff. Always been impressed by Bowie's vocal. I think one of the first, we talked about some of our first memories. I think one of my first memories of Bowie was being in grade school and having a day near the end, or a party near the end of the year where they put on a movie. We watched The Lap.
Oh, sure. And
David Bowie being, you know, a feature in that movie and singing a number of songs in the movie. And I remember being so impressed with his vocal range. I'm not even sure at that point if I knew who he was. I think I did. I think I knew, oh, hey, my dad has you know, one of his albums. I've listened to his music. Oh, wow, he did movies too? You know, like, not really understanding kind of all the history there, because, I mean, the movie would have already been probably close to 10 years old at that time, or at least 5 years old. But, just great, a great vocal, and a really fun album to listen to. Really good.
Yeah, well said.
Want to pick a couple tracks for the playlist?
Sure.
You can go on Spotify, SoundLogic Favorites, and we pick two tracks from each album that we review. Put them up there. So, are you going first or am I going first?
Well, I'll start by saying, at least according to Spotify, there are two tracks, Life on Mars and Changes, the two singles that are way, hundreds of millions of listens more than the rest of the album. So those are two tracks that our listeners probably already know. You can go first if you want. I think my choice might be a little quirky, so go for it.
Okay. It's really tempting to just pick Changes, because it is so good.
It is good.
And I do like Life on Mars as well. I really like Queen Bitch. It's such a cool vibe. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna pick.
You're gonna go Bitch. Queen Bitch. Okay,
Queen Bitch. It's
I'm gonna
such
go
a
with
cool
Kooks.
Song.
I like the story that it is.
It's fun.
It's for his child, and I think it's got an upbeat kind of zaniness to it that I really enjoy as well. So we'll put those two on for now, and then people will know four songs from this album instead of just two.
if you hadn't said that about Changes, I might have picked it.
Well, and I was going to say Life on Mars might be one of my favorite Bowie songs. I don't know.
Oh, wow. It's good. It is good.
I'm also a fan of Flight of the Conchords. I think they've come up a time or two on Fan Logic Podcast, and their Bowie episode is pretty great. Brett thinks that but we actually lived in space for a period of time.
It's me, David Bowie, from the music video to Ashes to Ashes. Yeah. Dressed up like a clown. Okay. Yeah, that's weird. But I love it. All right. Now, we've picked those tracks. Any other comments before we move on? Yeah, so let's move to that. So what's aged well and what hasn't?
I don't know. Bowie doesn't sound like he ever fit in with anything. This is not what rock music sounded like at his... when he was popular, right? Like, this is not what everyone else sounded like. So does it stand up? It stands up in that it's someone trying to be inventive and imaginative and creating something from nothing. I don't know what I would say beyond that, because it is so different than what you'll find in most pop music or rock music, at least among his contemporaries, and even today.
Oh boy, yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, you hear elements of things happening at the time, but he kind of mashes everything together to make something different.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so, so good. I really like what you said there, but like, did he ever really fit in completely? Like, and he was never trying to. He was so authentic.
I've never read any biographies of his. I don't know. Maybe he was always wanting to fit in and never succeeded. No. But I don't know. With the personas that he took on, I don't get the sense that he was really striving to be mainstream or fit with whatever was popular at the time.
I think for me the main thing that maybe hasn't aged as well is just, and we've talked about this before, it's not even fair, just maybe production quality. You can kind of hear it and go, this is a 70s thing, you know. Oh, I can place
snare
it here.
Drum problems.
No, I'm okay with the snare here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all right. They haven't moved to that highly protest kind of process. You know, kind of snare that we got in the 70s. I think Floyd did that pretty early on. I guess the vocalizer. But again, you could put his vocal style in any decade of the five decades that he produced music, and it's not going to fit. It's going to be different because it's Bowie, you know? Like, I just...
Yeah. He might have fit best as a crooner, like in the sort of Sinatra era of, like...
I don't know. Some of this stuff's pretty wild, but, like, I think that there are so many elements, different elements on this album in particular, that would fit in different places in contemporary music. You know, there's the kind of ballady stuff, there's the piano stuff, there's the rockin' guitar stuff, which would fit, you know, with bands today like the Strokes and other bands, you know, the kind of this kind of pop punk or punk indie style kind of floats in and out of popularity for the last, you know, few decades. There's a lot of it, I think, that does well depending on what you like. I think there's a lot for everybody here. So I think it would stand up well. I think it is still an album. It's not maybe one of his more acclaimed albums, or Bowie is, like, so many of his albums, I think, are recognized visually first. Everybody knows.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Maybe it's because we're not huge Bowie fans. I don't...
No, I think they're just iconic. Like, the Aladdin Sane album cover, everybody knows that image. It's been redone and copied and parodied a billion times, you know, TV shows and movies, you know, the lightning bolt on the face. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know if that album has any singles on it. You know, but the image. So I think so many, the Ziggy album, maybe we know more songs. The cover I felt I wasn't familiar with when we did it. But there's other covers like Low, Diamond Dogs, that I think the covers are so iconic, and this one I think even just the cover is maybe just a little less familiar to people, but I think given the chance there's really a lot of stuff on here for everybody. So I think a lot of it has aged well, and Bowie is so, you cannot, even if you don't know the song,
it's really hard to listen to a Bowie track and not say that's David Bowie.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a unique vocal, even the style of music.
Yeah, and so, he still finds his way. I mean, you mentioned Life Aquatic, which is now several years old, but he still finds his way into pop culture, even though he's passed away for a number of years now.
Yeah.
It's still there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is number 88. As you mentioned, Ben, it's the third album by Bowie we've talked about. So three in the top 100 is not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
Not a ton of artists, you know, outside of the Stones, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, you know, a few others. Not a ton have that many in the top 100. He might be in a very elite group there.
Yeah, especially with this newer list. Like, I think that happened more with the older ones.
It did. Yeah, there was less diversity, especially in the top 100. There's more now. But this is his third album. So what do you think about 88th best album ever?
As I said earlier, I'm a bit surprised that this one's not higher than the others we've listened to, or at least up in the same ballpark. So I'd like to see this one higher. It hit me strongest of the ones we've tackled so far. So, yeah, count me in the crew that wants more hunky dory, and is a little surprised that it is where it is on this list.
I would put this one higher than Station to Station.
Okay.
I wouldn't put it higher than the Ziggy album because I think it's iconic in so many ways. I think there's a few more recognizable tracks there. I would be okay with this just outside the top 100. I don't see the impact necessarily, and that's a fairly ignorant, uninformed statement, but you know, it's sure. It's a good album, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I don't see people, you know, toting this album around, the image of it, the talking about it as much as I maybe would from other albums we've talked about, but I'm okay with it here. I'm gonna jump to the next section just because it's relevant here. This is one of five albums on the list. At one point, there was total, if we put every album that's ever been on any version of this list, there's seven. But with the exception of the Ziggy album, which dropped down five spots, all the other albums have jumped way up, especially Station to Station, which is 52. It used to be 324. This Hunky Dory album was 108. It's 88 now. And then we're going to talk about two more albums. Low from 1977, which was 251 up to 206. And then 1980's Scary Monsters, which is number 443. It hasn't been on any versions of the list. Two more albums, Aladdin Sane, which was on the first two versions of the list, but it's not on anymore. And then a compilation album, not the one I was talking about, but another one called Changes One, was on the first version and the coffee table, but then was dropped off. So if you look at it, he's had seven albums total on the list at one point in time around. So we've still got two more to talk about. But yeah, we see a lot of his moving up.
Right.
Which is interesting. I guess the one difference is from when the 2012 list to the 2020 list was his passing. I think I want to say 2016.
Yeah, true.
So sometimes an artist passed, and because it's in the news, people start listening to their music more.
Yep.
Because it's as the kids say, it's trending.
Yeah.
Right. And people go out and they download it, or they buy albums, or they go, man, I haven't really listened to Bowie in a while, you know.
Right.
Or, man, I never really paid attention to that. Let me get some albums. So, anyways, very interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else, Ben, before we wrap it up here?
No, I've really enjoyed this. I'm glad to have one more in the list of albums that I can say I've heard. And if I ever see that student again, I'll be able to school them now instead of asking them for some advice.
Bowie. Yeah, you're three Bowie albums in now.
Yeah.
That huge might knowledge. Be like 20% of his catalog, maybe.
Right.
Thanks for listening to this album. We got another, of course. We're not through the 80s yet. Number 89. What do we got coming up next week, Ben?
Yeah, boy, it feels like we've been just like experiencing whiplash from the genre pivoting that we've been doing lately. But
it's been a lot, yeah.
We're going to an album by Erykah Badu, who rose to fame kind of in our prime music listening years in the 90s and early 2000s. Baduism is her album that we'll be tackling next time, coming up at number 89 on the 2020 list.
Yeah, in the another Atlanta artist, I think in the neo-soul genre. Mm, so
yeah.
Always fun to come back to that. Until that time, we hope that you continue to be well. We hope that you take care of yourselves and those around you. And of course, we really hope you'll join us again right here on the SoundLogic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you next time. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.